Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Vav, and we're holding on daf Mem Hei Amud Beis. We only got up to, I think, the Tana Rabbanan. Please correct me if I'm... No, actually, I think we didn't even get up to there. I think we got up to Omar Ula, Bo B'mar Rav. So it's about three lines down from the middle of those big lines. First words on the line. Omar Ula. So yesterday we were talking about the question about the relationship of Tziruf Kli. We're over here. We understand that if we've got a kezias worth of this chometz little pieces that are in the areva, then the areva is mitzaref them, and it makes us mechuyev to be mevayer them. But how about if it's in a house? We're talking about if we have chometz in a room. So we said that the chometz in the room, the only chashash over there is, if you're going to sweep the floor and they would end up all being together. So one would fall on top of the other, they'd be in the same container. But otherwise, you wouldn't have to be makbid. So Ula today wants to know what is considered to be in the same house, as far as this chashash is concerned. How about if something is on the top floor, something else is on the bottom floor? No, actually, I remember we did, because I made fun of the robot that's got it's not going to climb down the stairs, right? So we did do this. Okay, so if it's on different floors, what would be the din? If it's on bayit va'ach sadra, what would be the din? Suppose you got like this big porch where you've got these sliding doors that's open, you're constantly going in and out from the porch to the house. So over there, is that also a chashash that even though it's a porch, but nonetheless, the constant interrelated usage might mean that the chometz that's going to be in one will end up in the other? What would be the din over there? And if even over there you're going to be choshesh, what would be the din if it would be shnei batim zelifni mizeh? Now, how about if it's a room that you go into by walking through the outer rooms? You got one family living in an inner room and one family living in the outer room. So over there, you don't have as much traffic going through back and forth from one to the other. Obviously, to try to avoid traveling through one or the other, you have to be choshish even for that type of mixing of the chometz from one to the other. Teku. It's a big machlokas, in fact, whether the teku in general is teku on iser, considered to be always the paskin lechumra, even in iser drabona. There are some poskim who are machmer on this because that's how they feel. Where a Gemara leaves something in a teku, it doesn't have a din of a suffix drabona, and we're machmer on it lechumra, even in a drabona. Tana rabona. Hapat she'ipsha, v'nifsalam le'achol la'adam, v'akelev yachol la'ochla, mitamet umas ochlim b'kebeitza, v'nisrefet im hatmeya b'pesach. So now, in a continuation of understanding what is the nature of achila and what is the nature of ochlim, which we base everything on the dinim of Pesach, we use Pesach as our benchmark, really, for understanding what is considered to be, and we expand from there, as we've seen until now, the mokra of the Isurin of Isra Hano, and the question of the dinim of Taroves, and the issue of Hetam Itztarif LeYisra, whether Tam Ki Iker, and so on and so forth. Always Pesach has been our benchmark, both in terms of Kachim and Chulin, because of the way that the Torah has made the entire holiday a function of dinim of Achila. So because of this, we're expanding a little bit over here in trying to understand what are the maximum limits of describing a food stuff. In other words, we talked about chometz nuksha, which is not palatable chometz. We didn't get to talk about inedible chometz. Now, what you're talking about over here is we have a piece of bread that has turned completely moldy, and no human would eat this thing. But it's still suitable for animal achila. So the din over there is it's considered to still be metamei tumas ochlin, and as long as it has a shear, of course, but because of the fact that it's not suitable for eating, you can burn it together with something that is tamei, and there's no chashash over there of mishmeret because even though we had before a big machlokas about the, whether you're allowed to put truma tameya with the Torah, in this case, because it's also inedible, everybody is meida. Now, once it's inedible, there's no din of needing to be careful about whether it's going to become tamei. So if you're going to burn your chometz, you'd be allowed to put it together with tamei. Mishum Rabbi Natan Amru, it's not true. Once it became pasul from Achilas Adam, that is sufficient, according to Rabbi Nasan, to say that it's no longer going to be considered a foodstuff to be mitame. Now, take a look at this Mishnah. Kamana Azot, it's not. Klal Amru B'Taharot. So we have a general rule. Kol HaMiyuchad LaAdam Tame Ad SheYipasel MiAchilas Kelev. Uh-oh. Now, that is clearly saying Keman Deloka Rabbi Nasan, because here it says that anything that was once defined as a food for a human, even if now a human wouldn't eat it, it's still going to be Mekabel Tuma until such a point where it's no longer considered to be food for consumption, even by an animal. So then it would be, of course, Shaloka Rabbi Nasan, because according to Rabbi Nasan, it's the human consumption that defines how we call something edible in terms of a food. Tana Rabban. Now, how about cases where we make the chometz? Remember that by chometz we had the additional problem that as long as it's usable to be b'chameya acherim, that we spoke about yesterday, so then it would be usher because of the concept of se'or. Because sa'or is not used as food, but nonetheless, it's used to be mechamea acherim. So in a case where you have an arevata abdanim, now this is another halacha of areva. Till now, we were talking about an areva, which is a kneading bowl or kneading trough. And here we're talking about a tannery. Now, a tannery will use a large bowl or trough, not really a bowl, it's really a trough over here. And they would put the raw skins into this trough. The reason we call it an areva is because they would actually mix flour and water in it. And that would be part of the tanning process. You let the skins sit in that. Now, tanneries stink to high heaven. I mean, they're absolutely nauseating. And the trough itself is also disgusting because it absorbs the smell of the putrefying skins. And because of that, anything that's in the trough for any amount of a length of time, which we're going to see what is that considered to be, is considered to be nifsal because it's nothing that people would eat. So again, this would be considered to be nifsal from human achila. Once you put the actual skins in it, so then it's completely nifsal from achila. It's in a different stages. So over here, according to the Tanakhama, if you put flour into the areva, there's no skins in the areva at this point, and you just put the kemach in it, you mixed it with water, within 3 days of Pesach, you're going to have to get rid of it on Pesach because if, as we'll see, the 3 days of the Isser Chometz, right? So it's not considered to be less than 3 days. It doesn't lose its shame of Chometz. Now, that's not according to Rav Nasan, obviously, because no human would eat it. But if it was 3 days before, so then it's so disgusting that it's not considered to be edible at all, and then eino chayav levayer. Omar Rabbi Natan, b'me dvarim amurim. Now, wait a minute. This is only true if there were no skins in the areva. Because according to Rabbi Nasan, if there are skins, it immediately becomes nifsal from achilas adam. If there's no skin, so then it's a question of how much of the smell it picks up from being in the areva. So over there, yes, fine. You could say that it takes 3 days to become permeated with this stench, and that is the only time that it becomes nifsa. But according to me, the moment you put orot in it, natan letocha orot, afilu toch shlosha, eno chayav levayer, could be even a minute before, because even though the smell doesn't penetrate the flour, once we make it something that is no longer considered to be a food, it's the equivalent of being miyachid, it is a non-food that is nifsal. So over there, eno chayav levayer. And says, Rava, we paskim like Rabbi Nosson, and that the din is, even if it's mamish right before the time of the Yisr, you can rely on Rabbi Nosson. It's even a day, even an hour before, as long as the skin was in there, Rabbi Nosson is telling you it's not considered to be edible food. Okay, now this concludes that aspect of the Mishnah. Now we want to see whether we can use also the dinim of Pesach to give us a benchmark for various other halachas that would define whether something is considered to be a food when it's inside of the bowl. So we're using that idea of looking at food as silicon, as a sealant, or does it still retain its din of food? Now, the Mishnah is the reason, I mean, maybe we wouldn't have done this on ourselves, but the Mishnah says, V'chein le'inyan tuma. And as we pointed out when we read the Mishnah, there's something very strange about that, because the Mishnah continues to say, im makpida lav, so then chotzeitz. And im eino makpida lav, eino chotzeitz. Now, the din of makpida lav was completely irrelevant to the din of Pesach. Right? So then for the Mishnah to say, and it's exactly the same when it comes to Tumah, namely that if you're Makbid, what do you mean namely if you're Makbid? There's no din of Makbid on Pesach, so you're contradicting yourself. Okay, so that's the thing now that we'd like to understand. What did the Mishnah mean when it said, V'chein le'inyan Tumah? Then you say, Imakbid alav chotzeitz, and if you want it to stay there to be silicon, so then in Rotsa B'Kiyomo, then it has the same din as the Arivas. Explain to me what you mean. Because on the surface, they're not similar in any way. What do you mean, Mechein, Midami? It's not the same. Because where it was Nogea Chometz, remember, the difference was entirely, nothing to do with your Hakpada. The difference was entirely in terms of the Shear and where it was on the Areva, right? So it was a question of less than a Kazayas, more than a Kazayas. The Abaya explained it. It would be a function of the area A or B or C that was more than a Kazayas or less than a Kazayas. What does that have to do with Imak Piralav? This makes no sense. If there it was totally in the Shear, and over here it's totally in the Kepeda, it's totally in the owners wanting it there, not wanting it there. So what's going on? Omer Rav Yehuda, well, yeah. I guess what we should say is, and when it comes to Tuma, it's not like that. Says Abaya, yeah, that's great. Except for the minor problem that the Mishnah says it is like that. I mean, you know, but we can sort of ignore those kind of problems if you're listening to CNN, I guess. But we're not listening to CNN, Tainas Abaya. And therefore, if it says in the Mishnah, V'chein le'inyan Tumah, I don't think it's a good idea to change that to read and not le'inyan Tumah. Okay, so what could it possibly mean? I think, says Abaya, I mean, we got to make this work out. What it means is like this, that where v'chein le'inyan siruf tumah b'pesach, if we're talking about a question about you need to know whether you have a kibetza, right? So because if you don't have a kibetza, remember we have our standing machlokas of Rashi and Tosfos, if you don't have a kibetza, you certainly can't be metame other things with this food. Tosfos holds even the food itself is not metame. Rashi holds the food is metame, even if it's parchesmi kibetza. But whatever the case would be, in the event that you did need a kibetza, and you don't have a kibetza, now what you want to do is you want to add the material that is stuck in the side of the bowl to the amount of food that you do have, and therefore we need to make a determination whether food stuck to the inside of the bowl is considered to be food, and would it be mitztaref with other food so that it could reach a shear of a kibetza, or not. So that's what it's saying, that if it's during Pesach, then the halacha is that it's like the dinim in the Mishnah. If it's not during Pesach, and that's how to understand the Mishnah, it's talking about two different things. V'chein le'inyan tuma means for tzira, for the shear of tuma during Pesach. If it's not during Pesach, continues the Mishnah, then it depends whether the owner is makben on it, and then it's dependent on that. Let me explain it to you. Hechidah. So let's imagine a case. We have less than a kibetza of food, and it's in this bowl, and it is in contact with the chometz that is in the cracks. And together with that chometz, it would actually be the proper shear of a kibetza benogei dinim of tum. And now, the tuma touches this batzek. So during Pesach, we're over there, the iser of a kizayit of chometz makes all the difference in the world. So in that case, the dough, once it would be a shear that's b'chayev you to get rid of it, that gives it a chashivas because of the dinim of Pesach. So now you're treating it as food. So if you're treating it as a food, so now it will be mitzarev together with the other food. However, b'shar yamot hashana, continues the Mishnah, what would I use as a criteria, as a criterion for the tziruv? There's only one criterion, which is b'kpeda tal yamilta. Imakpida lav b'tzarev. If the owner wants to get rid of this chometz, not because it's chometz, whatever it is that's stuck inside of the cracks of the bowl. So the very fact that he wants it out of the bowl means that it hasn't lost its din of ochlin yet. It's not bottled to the bowl if the guy's going to be gouging it out of the cracks, right? So then it's considered to be food, and it would be mitzarev. But if he wants it there, he says, this is silicon, as far as I'm concerned, and it's sealing up my bowl. So then it gets the din of the bowl. And therefore, depending, of course, it wouldn't matter here on the shear. It would only matter. So then, even if it's a kizayis, it would still be part of the areva itself, and it will not become part of the food. Okay, so then we have to split the Mishnah. That's the solution. We'll split the Mishnah. The first part that says v'chein is talking about during Pesach, and then the next part that says imak b'dalav is talking about b'shar yimot hashana. Says Rava, I don't like this approach. I mean, it doesn't say anything in the Mishnah about being mitzareif. It says in the Mishnah chotzeitz. Okay, so how can you put in an issue that we're not even talking about in the Mishnah? The case in the Mishnah is concerned not with whether it's mitzarev based on the owner's wanting it there or not, but rather based on the question of whether it's a chatzitza dependent on the owner's wanting it. So you're saying it wrong. I mean, I agree with your basic approach that, yes, the Mishnah is definitely making a difference between during Pesach and other times. Fine. But I just don't believe that it's referring to tziruv. It obviously is referring to chatzitza, which is a completely different issue. So let me tell you how to say it properly, taking your basic approach. But this is what you should have said. Elo amar Rava, v'chein la'alot tahara la'areva. If you want to put this areva into a mikveh and its tummy, that's where the Mishnah is coming to say that it's a question of whether it's a chatzitza or not. In other words, the Mishnah is taking for granted. This areva became tummy. Now you want to put it into the mikvah. Boil it to bule. So therefore, the Mishnah is saying like this. During Pesach, where the fact that you need to get rid of this chometz is very important in terms of the dinim of Pesach, so that makes it into a chatzitza. And by definition, the tefillah is not going to help until, in fact, you gouge it out and get rid of it because it's not meant to stay there. So it's chotzeitz. But b'shar yamot hashana, like you say, b'shar yamot hashana, then it's only entirely b'kpeda tal yamilta, and imakpeda lav chotzeitz, and imrotze b'kiyumo, areu kareva, you want it there as silicon, it now is meant to stay there, therefore it's not a chatzitza, you put it into the mikvah, and the mikvah was metairet. Rav Papa says, I don't know, I mean, I understand what Rav is saying, but I don't think he's improved the situation very much. It doesn't say v'chein l'inyan tahara, it says v'chein l'inyan tum'ah. It's all very nice to talk about the chatzitza, yes. And I understand you're jumping to the conclusion that when you say the word chatzitza, you're talking about wanting to put it into a mikveh, because that's what you're used to using the word chatzitza for, but that's not what the Mishnah says. Now, there certainly is a concept of chatzitza, not in terms of the mikveh, but chatzitza in terms of Kabbalah stuma. It's a very simple issue. You guys are both right. The Mishnah is split between during Pesach, after Pesach. It's using Pesach as a model only during the Pesach period. And I just need to adjust what you said a little bit, so now it'll fit into the Mishnah. The Mishnah's talking about a chatzitza in front of Tuma. Let's imagine a situation where you have a sheretz, a dead sheretz, and it's coming into contact with this part of the kneading bowl. It doesn't touch the wood of the kneading bowl. It touches the so-called silicon. So now the question is, is that what you're calling silicon? Is it food? If it's food and it's going to therefore not be part of the areva, so then there's no way for the areva to become tummy. Because even if there would be a full kibetza over there, the areva would not be metame. Because remember, Oakland cannot be metame a kli. So then it would be a chatzitza and it would save the bowl from tuma. On the other hand, if we would give it a din of silicon so that it's actually part of the bowl, so then if you touch the sheretz to any part of the bowl, I don't care whether that particular part of the bowl is silicon, but the idea is that that is the areva. So it would definitely be metame the areva. I mean, even yadayim are metame, not yadayim of your hands, but yadayim of the areva, extensions of the areva are metame. So then that's the point. So here's how to read it. V'chein le'inyan lahorid, says Rav Papa, to bring tuma to the areva. There is the question of the chatzit. So let me tell you what we're talking about over here. A sheretz touched the batzek that is stuck in the cracks, okay? So therefore, like you said, I'm not arguing on you on the basic, anything basic. So in Pesach, where the Isser is considered to be chashuv, so then it's a chatzitza because it's not meant to be part of the bowl and it has to be removed from it. And therefore, no nachtalo tuma, there was no tuma on the bowl. But b'shar yemot hashana, over there, it's dependent on the person's hakpada. If he intends to get rid of it, so then it's not part of the bowl, and it's a chatzitza. If he likes it there because he says that's good silicon sealant, so then it becomes like a reukareva. I don't care how big it is. And over there, it will be part of it, and it's as if the sheretz touched the areva itself. And now, what would be the din if the areva was as big as Richie's rowboat? That would be a question. You'll remember the sugya earlier. It tells us that rowboats are not mekabel tuma because anything that goes in the yam is not mekabel tuma. But if we're not talking about that, we could still, now that we've woken up our captain, we can still ask him to introduce the next Mishnah. So there we go.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie.
No, Richie.
So, the Hedeka Mishnah.
Lovely. But seik hacheresh. This is the way most people read the Mishnah. It could be read, but seik hacheres. Okay? But the meaning would be the same. But Seka Cheresh means, the way Rashi understands it, look, it's a non-communicative but sake, okay? It can't talk to you. So it's similar to a deaf mute, right? So, I mean, a deaf mute's got ears. You're looking at him, but you have no idea whether he's understanding what you're saying, picking up with what you're saying, or so on. And that's one of the difficulties in dealing with deaf mutes. That's why we have to go through training and so on in order to be able to communicate. So this butsake is deaf and dumb. It can't speak to you. So what that means is that for some reason, the butsake is not fully responsive. What happened is that it did turn into the hichsifu panav. So it got that coloration and the look of pale bloating that makes you think that it's becoming chometz. And then the problem is it never goes beyond that. Now, normally chometz will go beyond that because the next stage, a few minutes later, is to start getting the karnei chagavim, as we explained, which are the little cracks that appear on the top of the dough. And that's a sign of absolute chimutz. So we don't know what to do. So the thing to do is to look at an equivalent dough which had been actually made at the same time. If you've got another piece of dough that you made at the same time that is responding and it shows signs of chimutz, look at this. Look at this. The Goldsteins have presented us with something that is about to be yichsifu panav. Okay. We could sit and watch. Very good. Thank you. So the idea over there would be use another reference dough and base your halacha in this dough on that dough. So if the other dough made at the same time has turned into chametz, then you have to assume that this dough has turned into chametz as well. And now here we have finally reached something very close to Richie's heart and arm. And that is, have 18 minutes passed yet since he started doing the Lisha? Now, as he gets his watch, shows those 18 minutes approaching, Richie starts to panic. And here is the Gemara where we finally get to an understanding of those 18 minutes. What do you do if you have a batsek that is cheresh, and you don't have a reference dough? So you mean sham kayotze bo mahu. At what point do you have to consider it to be chometz? Om Rabbi Abba, Om Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Well, it's the amount of time that would take a person to walk from Migdal Nunya to Tveria. And that amount of time is a meal. Now, just when we need Barnea to tell us about the neighborhood, he's decided to go to another neighborhood. Because what can I tell you, gentlemen? Migdal Nunya, as far as it's identified today, is nowhere near a meal close to Tveria. It's actually something more like 10 mil from Tveria, because it's associated with Magdala, or the town of Migdal, which is near Tveria. But even from the town of Migdal, it's still almost 4 miles to Tveria. So I'm not sure what Migdal Nunya actually represents here, as it certainly cannot be what Reb Shimon ben Lakish was referring to. So anyway, why confuse us? I mean, why not just say meal? Well, that obviously he's trying to give us a reference that we can easily look up on Google Maps so that we will now learn the size of a meal. Otherwise, we're going to have all these machlokas and, oh, a meal in those days was much bigger than it was in these days, and the earth has shrunk and all those kind of things. So because of that, we want to get a correct reference. That's all he's trying to do. So he's telling us that the shear of a meal is as long as it gets from Migdal Nunya until Tveria. Anyway, once we're mentioning these references that relate walking to shiurim of zman. Now, the shear of a meal is brought in numerous places, and it actually, there are different shiurim. It's nogea, let's say the minimum amount of time to salt your meat, even though you're supposed to leave it there for an hour. Over there, we say that the shear of the meal is maybe 23 minutes, according to some, 25 minutes, according to some. When we're talking over here, l'chumra, l'gabe, worrying about the Pesach, whether it turned into chometz, so over there we're makbid on the meal, says the Mishnah Berurah, of yud ches minuten. So 18 minutes becomes the shear of the meal. And that's where the 18 minutes come from. Amar Rebbe Abba. Now, of course, the 18 minutes that are mentioned over here in the Mishnah are only about the batzei kacheresh, right? In other words, we have no other information. It wasn't being worked on. The halacha is that as long as you continue to work the dough, it's not going to become chimutz. Our problem is that it already showed the signs of yichsifu panav. Now, in reality, if a matzah dough would already show signs of yichsifu panav, as the Mishnah Berurah points out, you better be darn sure you get rid of that dough right away. Because, I mean, the question of whether it's chametz d'oraisa and so on, it's certainly usher to eat yichsifu panav. And nobody seems to pay any attention to that anymore, he says. You better learn to pay attention to that. So, I mean, essentially, the whole thing seems to be irrelevant. If it was Ichsifu Panav, it would already be usher, and you'd have to throw it out. And if it's not Ichsifu Panav, and you're still busy working the dough, so what's going on? I mean, so, like, why are we worried about it? That you can work dough all day long, and it's not going to become chimetz, it only becomes chametz once it is that you work the dough. So there are a number of issues that this is nogea. One is the question of whether, And this is again something Richie will attest to, although he hides from any level of attestment behind his name, thinking the name itself is enough. But in fact, there's like little tiny pieces of dough that scatter around and that don't get worked on necessarily. You need to make sure that you collect every single piece, right? So we are worried. One of the issues over here is that we're worried that maybe there was a small piece of dough that didn't get worked and then got reabsorbed into the dough. And that piece, maybe we didn't note, but that maybe that piece was Hixifupanam. Anyway, so we're going to be makbid on Yud Ches Minuten because of that. Others learn that, look, the din about the dough, are you trying to show us Karnei Chagavim over there?
Bits of dough is getting stuck around the
bowl. Oh, you're showing us yeah. Yes, yes, there we are. There's our Areva. Excellent. There's the Areva with little pieces of dough, as you can see, which is the basis of the problem, according to some. The other issue, according to others, is the din that the shihiyot mitztarfot. Shihiyot mitztarfot means that even if you've been working on your dough for a long time, you have not been working without any hefsek. So have you measured the hafsakot? Because if the hafsakot themselves will add up to 18 minutes, so then you have 18 minutes. Well, I mean, since you haven't measured the hafsakot, therefore, you are going to have to be machmir because maybe you're a lot lazier than you think. Okay, so it's for that reason that Richie has now purchased an Apple Watch, which measures the number of times that you bang the dough and gives you a list of the hafsakot. So when it does your dough-making analysis together with your sleep analysis, it tells you out of the time that you were making this dough, you did not do anything for X amount of time. And that would be a solution to the Yud Ches Minuten. Since, however, in those days, apparently they did not have that level of sophistication, we're going to be makbid. Anyway, we have Reb Barnea back, which is very useful because we were upset that you avoided us in order not to have to give your opinion about Migdal Nunya to Tveria. Apparently, you would have to admit it's not your neighborhood, and you didn't want to do that. So we want to know whether you've got any data, because the Migdal Nunya that I'm aware of is very far from Tveria. It's a good 8 to 10 kilometers from Tveria, which is a heck of a lot more than a meal. Do you have any idea what else could be Migdal Nunya than Magdala? We've got a muted Barnea, which sometimes is good. But
also, Magdala was apparently in time of by a shady called Trechia, Trachia, and not Magdala. So, no, I don't know. Thank you for the question.
Okay, thank you. Now you have to hide no longer. I could start waving around the glasses to celebrate the beer hall effect, since it's not Pesach, and so on. Okay. So now, once we've had these shiurim that are functions of walking, you should know there's another shiur that is dependent on walking, and that is not one meal, but rather four meal. And says Rabbi Abo that Reb Shimon ben Lakish also said that if you were hired as a gabal, so you're supposed to be working on somebody's bread, and he's hiring you on making the dough, or you are on your way to tefillah, or you want to eat and you want to get to some water for netilat yadayim, the shear in all of these cases is four mil. Now, what is each one of these things? The gabal is because we're assuming that the person wants his bread to be done b'tahira, and his kalim have not been put in the mikveh, and therefore the gabal has got the responsibility to take care of it and put it in the mikveh. How far does he have to walk to get to a mikveh to have kalim tahorim? His responsibility is up to arba milim. Now, this question of what it means arba milim to tefillah, that is a big machlokas between Rashi and the Oruch. So the Oruch says, in terms of washing your hands before davening, that's what we're referring to over here. And if you want to daven, you need to wash your hands, and therefore you'd have to walk, if you're going the direction, as we'll see that you're going anyway, you'd have to walk an additional 4 mil. This means literal walk. It's not the time. Or is it? Well, consider. You're in a car. Is it still 4 mil, even though it takes you only 1/20th the time? Or is it a function of the distance? Well, actually, halacha l'maisa, that's a big machlokas of the later postgame, of whether this is just a shear in distance and was not meant to be correlated to the shear of time, k'day hiluch arba milim, or whether it's actually a shear in time and therefore would apply exactly the same if you were in a car or in a wagon and so on. So anyway, that's the gabal. Rashi learns, as far as the tefillah is concerned, that it means if you need to get to daven with a minyan. Now that, of course, means a major chiddush about how much tircha you have to go to daven with a minyan. Because it's saying over here you'd have to walk 4 mil ahead of where you're going in order, if it's in this correct direction, in order to make sure you get to a Beit Knesset. So this is a big question, because, I mean, essentially the Shulchan Aruch paskens like this, and yet when the Shulchan Aruch comes to tell you the din of being mispalel with a minyan, he does not say it's a chiyuv. He says yishtadel adam leyitpalel with a minyan. So you could learn that simply means don't put off your davening and maybe lose a davening because you can't find a minyan. You should only be mishtadel, and therefore it's the same Lashon of Chiyuv. However, there are many who understand the Shulchan Aruch is not saying that. And therefore, okay, so this becomes an insight into how to balance the issues of the minyan. In other words, understand that if you were on the road and you're looking for a place to rest for the night, and you're tired, you want to go into a motel, there's a shul up ahead next to another motel, and it's 4 mil ahead. Oh, God, I'm so tired. You'd have to walk those 4 mil. So take that amount of tircha into consideration in making the judgment about whether you should be going to a minyan or not. And the other one of the tilas yadayim is for food. So for food over there, if you are not going to be able to eat, and the only way to eat your bread would be to use gloves on your hands to make sure that you don't come into contact with the food, you're not allowed to do that lechatchila, and you should walk up to 4 mil in that direction in order to avoid using gloves or a handkerchief, whatever, and get to your water. Omer Nachman bar Yitzchak, this is wrong, okay? It's not Rabbi Abohu. You're quoting this whole thing wrong. It was Ivo. Somebody got mixed up between Ivo and Avu. Ivo was the one who said this. Quoting Rish Lakish, not Rabbi Abu, and it was not three things that he said, it was four things that he said, which means we have to add an additional one, Arba Omar. One of them is that Benogea, leather working, it's also a function of 4 mil. What's that referring to? That's referring to the Mishnah in Chulin. So the Mishnah in Orav Arotav explains that there are certain types of skins that are so soft, that on different parts of the body, that are so soft that they are considered to be a food stuff, even though normally food would only include the meat, let's say, of an avela. But in this case, they would be actually metame, unless they were worked on as leather. So what is the shear of working on them as leather? That's what we're talking about over here. The first stage of leather working was to let people trod on it back and forth. You walk over the skins. So therefore, it says, kulon she'ibdan, if you actually worked it, you put it into acid or whatever, or you did the first stage of hiluch b'hem, the shear of avoda, that would make the skin tahar. Unless you're a Nazi and you're processing human skins, and then it would not make the skin tohar. That's a gezeirah derabbanan about how to treat human skin. V'kama kidei avodah. So there we ask, what is the shear? Omreb aibo omreb yanai kidei hiluch arba milim. So that was the fourth example of arba milim. Omreb Yezib Rebbe Chanina, this din of walking is only if you're walking ahead, going in the direction you were meant to be going. Lo shanu ala lefanav, but I mean, for you to have to walk back to get to the minyan or to get to the water, you do not have to, even one meal, you don't have to go back. Omer of Acha, okay, but that means even one meal. But from there, I can infer that if it's less than a meal, I would have to go back. Ha-pachot mi-meal chozer. And now we are chozer to Sir Richard. Thank you, sir. Now we go into more interesting questions, and amazingly, what we're going to get to in this doesn't seem to be related on the surface, but what we're going to be getting to is the fascinating background to the din of Eruv Tafshilin, which turns out to be, of course, very, very nogea, or Yom Tov when it's next to Shabbos. And as you know, we're heading into the opposite situation this year, but generally speaking, where we've got a Yom Tov first, then a Shabbos, we make an Eruv Tafshilin. So, says the Mishnah, which doesn't seem to be nogea that, Ketzad mafrishin chala betuma b'yom tov. Imagine we've got ourselves a real problem, because chala has the same din as truma, right? So if I have tuma here, and I'm going to make the chala, it's going to be tame, the kohen's not going to be allowed to eat it. If the kohen's not allowed to eat it, so then there's no way for it to be eaten in time before it becomes chametz. So you'll say, okay, big deal. So if it's challah tmeah anyway, it's meant to be burned. You just burn it. Ah, but you can't burn kachim on yantiv. What are you going to do now? If you don't take out the challah, you won't be able to eat your bread, your matzah. If you do take off the challah, you're going to be stuck with chometz because it's soon going to turn into chometz and you have nothing to do with it. You certainly can't bake it because you're only allowed to bake things that you're allowed to eat. And that's the din of lachem on yantav. So you, what are you going to do? You can't burn it. You can't be mechalo yantav by baking it. And it's going to be chametz. Good heavens. So Rebbe Eliezer says, I'll tell you what the eitzah is. Lo tikra lashem achetofet. Don't make it challah until it's already baked. So then, since you bake, you're baking each one of these chalot matzahs. You're baking them separately. So each one of them, you could say, okay, you know what? I'm going to be eating this. How are you going to be eating it? Where are you going to take off challah? I've got other dough maybe I'll use to take off challah, which you do. You keep doing this. And each one of them, you could always use something you already baked to take off challah. So therefore, each one is essentially usable as you're going about baking it. Ben Beteira says, no, this is not a good idea. What you would do, because ultimately, you're baking something that you're not going to be eating, right? So therefore, I don't understand what this eitzah is. What you need to do is you need to put the challah into the freezer. If you put the challah into the freezer, the cold temperature will prevent it from becoming chametz. So then, after it's yantiv, take it out of the freezer and burn it before it becomes chametz. Everything is fine. So tatil betzonein. Rabbi Yeshua says, what's wrong with you guys? What's the problem? It isn't yours, is it? I mean, this, if you call it challah, it belongs to the Kohen. And you didn't give it to a particular Kohen who asked you to keep it for him, did you? So it's neither yours nor any other Jews. So there's no problem of having chometz in your house that doesn't belong to you and doesn't belong to anybody who's asked you to keep it for you. What's the problem? Maybe you'll come to eat it. So we said before, take a pot and put the pot over to put it in a place where nobody's going to come into. But lo zehu chametz muzarin alav v'bayaraya v'ayimatzei, you're not going to have a problem of keeping this chametz in your home. So what's your difficulty? Let her be mafrish the challah and leave it until mitzvah yontav. And then you can burn it then. V'imich mitzvah mitzvah. If it turns into chametz, who cares? It's not your business. So now, this is an amazing machlokas. Rabbi Yoshua says, If it's challah, it's none of your darn business. Rabbi Eliezer obviously says it's still your business. You have to make sure that you're not going to have challah that's chametz. What do you think the machlokas is? One simple way of understanding the machlokas is in the question of tovat hana'a. Tovat hana'a means something that you have certain rights to that are worth money. So now, when you have some challah that you took off, to which kohen are you going to be giving this challah? Suppose granddaddy non-Kohen comes to you and says, look, my daughter married a Kohen, and you know, I got a grandson that loves to eat this challah. I will pay you a nickel for you to give him some challah that's worth a couple of bucks. It's well worth it for me. Are you allowed to take that money? Yes, you are. Okay, so then that means the determination of what you're going to do with your challah is worth cash. So now that's the question. Is that cash an actual value of ownership? Or is it simply an ancillary way of your making money that is not innate in the object, and therefore you don't own the object in any way? That's a big machlokas. Is tovat hana'a considered to be cash or not? So lema b'tovat hana'a kamiflage, Reb Eliezer, who says you've got to get rid of it, he holds that tovat hana'a is mamon, and therefore it's yours, because that's what you own in it. Whereas Reb Yehoshua says, this is not ba'yiro ba'yimatzi, it doesn't belong to you. So what's your problem? He obviously holds tovat hana'a eina mamon. Is that the machlokas? Is the Gemara? Not necessarily. It certainly could be understood that kulei amasarvei tovat hana'a eina mamon. It's not considered to be actual ownership in the challah itself. Nobody holds that. So then why does Reb Eliezer hold it's a problem? I'll tell you. Reb Eliezer applies the idea of ho'il. Now, ho'il is a major issue. Ho'il means since. In other words, given other possibilities, it would be X, we have to treat it as if it's X now. And this turns out to be a centerpiece of the dinim of cooking for Yontev and so on. So let's start, and this is the sneaky way that the Gemara introduces the idea of ho'il through the Mishnah Psachim. That could be the machlokas, because Reb Eliezer says, okay, is it possible for you to cancel the state of challah on this challah that you took off? Yes. All you need to do is you go to a chacham and you say, listen, I made something kodesh b'kedushas per, which has a din of a neder, nidrei hekdesh. I've changed my mind. Could you be matir the neder, which then would make the challah not challah? Aha. So therefore, since ho'il v'iboy yichil, if you wanted to, you could have gone and been shayil on your neder. Therefore, it's considered to be your property because it is in your hands to make it entirely your property. And since that's true, you have to be makbid on getting rid of it before Pesach, whereas Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, we don't consider that to be an issue. Did you make it non-chala? No. So what are we talking about theory for? Ho'il is not a principle that's going to change anything. Now, here is where we start getting into the question of the power of ho'il in determining what you're allowed to do on Yontev. Take a look at this machlokas. Ha'ofem yomtev l'chol. So somebody bakes on Yontev not to use on Yontev. Now, the only heter for baking on Yontev is the Torah said that it's lachem. Anything that you need for yourself, you're allowed to do. Over here, you don't need it for yourself. You're not needing it for Yontev. You're going to be using it after Yontev. So you baked from Yontev l'chol. So Rav Chisda says, okay, so you're mechuyev malchus because you were over on the lav of going ahead and doing malacha on Yontev. Okay, so there's no way out of this. Says Rabbah, no, you're not lokem. Because let me ask you something. Is it theoretically possible that some guests would knock on your door and would say, you got anything to eat? And you'd sit them down at your table and you'd serve them this? Yeah, it's possible. That's ho'il. So as long as it's possible that something is usable on Yontev, then you're not going to be chayav malchus. Whereas Rav Chisda says, we don't hold of ho'il. Omele Rabbah l'Rav Chisda, what do you mean you don't hold of ho'il? If you don't believe in ho'il, How in the world are you ever allowed to use a supposed takana called an Erev Tavshilin? How are you allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos? It's an Isser D'oraisa. You're saying the guy is going to get Malkus. So what good is this whole Rabbanan fiction that we're pretending as if the food is interrelated with Shabbos? It's crazy. How could that possibly mutter? Said Rav Chisda, what do you mean how is it mutter? You never heard of an Erev Tavshilin? I'm asking you how the Rabbanan can create an Erev Tavshilin to be mutter in Isser D'oraisa. You said the guy's going to get Malkus. According to me, the guy's not going to get Malkus because of a hoil. So then I understand that the idea of making an Erev Tavshilin is not to rely on hoil, because we don't want to do that lechatchila, to say since in the event. So therefore what we do is there's really a different reason. The reason is we're worried that if people see you cooking from one day to another day on Yom Tov, that you'll do actually cooking from Yom Tov to Chol, as we'll see. That becomes our problem. But so according to me, okay, so we do something so that everyone will know, no, you're not allowed to cook on Yom Tov for any other time. You need an Erev Tavshilin. There's only an Erev Tavshilin for Shabbos. So fine. So that handles that problem. But according to you, you all that's in Isser D'oraisa, there should be no way of making an Erev Tavshilin. So Bishum Erev Tavshilin, Shabbin, and Isser D'oraisa, that's crazy. Omar Leh, oh, you're making a big mistake. The din of the Lachem, which tells me that something, the question over here would be, what does the Torah answer in terms of saying the hachana from a din of Yom of Kodesh? Every din of a day of Kodesh is the same. Isn't Yom Tov called Shabbaton? The same way Shabbos is called Shabbaton. So as far as the Torah is concerned, you are absolutely allowed to do Tzorche Shabbos on Yom Tov, because Yom Tov is also called Shabbos over and over again. So it means it's the same type of Kedusha. So therefore, when it tells you that you're allowed to do your Malacha, and it says, Kol Malacha lo yasevem ach asher yeachel lechol nefesh, anything that you need for your nefesh, that indeed you can do. Exactly. That's the din in Mikra Kadesh, and that's a din in Shabbaton. So, Midiraisa, you'd be allowed to do it. The Rabbanan made a Gezerah. They made the Gezerah because they're afraid that if we allow you to bake from Yom Tov to Shabbos, people will think you can also bake from Yom Tov to Chol. So therefore, they made this takana. Kivan da'atzerhu rabbanan eruv tavshilin. Everybody knows, oh gosh, in order to be able to bake from Yom Tov to Shabbos, I'm going to need to have this whole complicated eruv tavshilin, man. So obviously, it will become very embedded in your understanding that you certainly, without that, you can't cook from Yom Tov. And therefore, for sure, you're not going to be able to go from Yom Tov to Chol, because there's certainly no such thing as an Erev Tavshilin then. So that's what it's for. Therefore, Aitaina, that's the entire purpose. Okay. So now it turns out that actually, fundamentally, Rabba and Rav Chisda agree that Mi'ikar Hadin, obviously, you are allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. According to Rabbah, what's the reason? Because since if guests would have come, hoil v'miklu orchim, therefore you're allowed to cook, right? According to Rav Chisda, we don't hold of hoil. The reason you're allowed to cook midiraisa is because Shabbos and Yom Tov are both called Kodesh in the same way, and both of them are the same, and hu levado ye'aselechem includes both Shabbos and Yom Tov. Fine. So fundamentally, they're agreed. There's only an Isser D'Rabbanan, and since the Rabbanan made that Isser to avoid the confusion, the avoidance of the confusion we can do through making the Erev Tavshilin, which is also a D'Rabbanan. Now, it turns out that Halacha L'Maisa, there is a major difference if you hold of Hoyo, or if you hold the reason is because of the Kedusha of Shabbos. And that reason That difference is this. Suppose it's the last half an hour of Yontif. You want to cook something. You put it into the oven to bake. It is not going to be ready in time for Orchim to come for you to be able to eat, to feed to the Orchim. It's going to be finished right at Shkia. So now, it makes a big difference. If the Iker Din of the Erev Tafshilin was based on the D'oraisa that you're allowed really to do anything you want till the last minute of the day. Okay, so then your Erev Tafshilin helps even in a case like that. But if the entire basis is Hoel, in a case where Hoel would not apply, then you would be not allowed to bake at the last minutes of Yontem. So that means, according to Rabba, we're going to have a much bigger Chumra in how it is that we allow our Erev Tavshilin to affect us. And in fact, it's brought lahalacha that you have to be makbid. That because since Rabba understands that that's the entire basis, if you wouldn't have a Hoel, do not be Samech on your Erev Tavshilin. If, Lamaisa, you didn't know this, and you were, okay, so then, b'diavad, we're samech on Rav Chista's approach also, perhaps. Okay, but this becomes, you could see, where it becomes a major issue. Anyway, comes along now Rabba again, being very upset with Rav Chista claiming there's no such thing as oil. And he says, what do you do with this halacha? Behema hamisukenet lo yishchot. You're not allowed to shecht an animal that is in danger of dying, and you need to shecht it because if you're going to wait another half an hour, this animal is going to be dead, which is going to cost you maybe a couple $100, and you want to make sure that you shecht it, but it's yontev. And can you shecht? Well, you can only shecht it k'desh yachol lechol emena k'zayet slimi ba'od yom. Only if there'll be enough time to check it and to prepare it so that at least the simplest level of braai, it'll be prepared to eat. Now note, says Rabba, it says to be able to eat it. Kadeshi yachol lechol. It doesn't say that you really intend to eat it. I mean, Mashma, since theoretically it's able, so that's because someone will come along maybe and eat it. I don't know. So, we're talking about even though you yourself have absolutely no intention of eating it, you already ate your meal, and you certainly do not have an appetite to eat anything else. So, okay, it's obviously based on the fact that you can never tell if Moshe Foreman knocks on the door. So then for sure someone is going to eat it, right? So, according to me, okay, the theory is enough. That would explain why you're allowed to do shechita. But according to you, I don't understand. You have no intention of eating it, not on Yontif, not on Shabbos. There is no Shabbos. We're talking about the last minutes of Yontif. Why does it say in this Brayis, it's actually also a Mishnah, why does it say that you're allowed to shecht it? Or Marleis, or if Chista says, what do you mean? You're going to lose a lot of money. What? Says Rabbi, lose a lot of money? What are you, a reform rabbi? Mishum hefsid mamona sharina nisura d'oraisa. So you're going to lose a lot of money. So what can you do? We're certainly not going to be mater and isur d'oraisa because you're going to lose money. So what are you saying? Says Rav Chista. Let me tell you something. If it's going to cost you that amount of money, then everybody is a Moshe Foreman. You'll manage to get down that stake. That's what it's saying. Mishum hefsid mamono gamar b'libo. Okay. I'm going to eat this, man, because I got to eat this, because if I don't eat this, it's going to cost me a few $100. And since E.F. Shalik, I mean, I only want to eat one tiny kezias, I'll force it down. And E.F. Shalik is Ayat Basar Balor Shkita, you obviously are going to have to shech the whole thing. So I can't believe I shechted the whole thing, but you don't have to eat it. So therefore, even according to Chista, it works out fine. Okay, so now we've gotten into today even the inyanim of the Erev Tafshilin, seen two completely different approaches, touched on the inyan of Hoel. Now remember that there's another very, very important issue that we did not touch on, which certainly changes the way to approach this whole sugya, and that is what happened mitoch shehutra letzorech, hutra shelo letzorech, which is the way we pass can leave it to Beis Hillel, and how are we ignoring the din of mitoch and only talking about the din of Hoel? That we shall have to talk about tomorrow, because as you may have noticed, We have run out of time. So, Bezrat Hashem, meet you to continue. Whew, finally get back to normal short daf tomorrow. So we'll be able to take up our regular life, I hope. All right, everybody, this is one heck of a packed Masechet, let me tell you. Kol Tov, have a great day, and see you all.